Hello. Hello and welcome to Debatable, a fake television show where we debate nothing. David Jacoby is inside the like nerve center of ESPN. Look at all these screens behind him.
You can tell that TV studio has lots of TVs playing TV.
That's right. There is fake sponsorship behind David Jacoby. There is real sponsorship in this corner. We are brought to you by Corona. Yes, we are all pointing. Over here, by the way. So do I. Ironically. Nope. Don't know what you're talking about. This, though, is Israel Gutierrez, who is having a tough break because he's lost in his house, I think. So play the music, and maybe by the time we get back. Let it play out, and ooh. I'm getting like the soft ocean wave.
Me too.
Static.
It's the Corona sponsorship.
That's right. You may think this is technological incompetence, but no, this is a very subtle and elaborate sound design. Oh, there it's gone.
I'm Andy Samberg. You are Snoop Dogg. We are drinking Coronas on the beach.
God, I've seen that commercial so many times, and it is great. I have nothing to say but positivity.
Love it. Snoop Doggy Dogg.
Alabaster. As Izzy flexes his way back into his chair.
Oh.
Wow. Oh, there.
That was a good slide. That was a great slide.
Well timed. You just arrived in time for Alabaster to yell at us in some form or fashion. So Alabaster, what are you yelling at us about now?
No, that was great. I appreciate the filibuster while we troubleshoot on the fly, Pablo D-O-double-G. But we can get started with the first topic, which is sort of crazy. We have on the back end of this question, we got sound feed listening from Dustin Johnson, who announced he's resigning from the PGA Tour. And this comes on the heels of Phil Mickelson also playing the first LIV Golf event. And our question to you, how do you expect the majors to handle players leaving the PGA Tour for LIV Golf?
So this is a story that is shot through with some real shit. But also some true absurdity.
A poop cannon.
A true poop cannon of a story, but let's light the fuse by just listening and watching this video first.
For right now, I resigned my membership from the tour. I'm going to play here, for now, and that's the plan. But what the consequences are going to be, I obviously can't comment on how the tour is going to handle.
So if you don't know this story, I don't know where you've been, but essentially the Saudi Arabian-backed LIV Golf Tournament had emerged famously because of the Phil Mickelson saga, a saga that I won't recap for you in totality here, but basically Phil Mickelson was quoted by an unauthorized biographer, the worst person to be quoted by, I would argue, the unauthorized biographer, saying all sorts of things that were both way too honest about Saudi Arabia and what they do, towards LGBTQ people, towards journalists like Kamal Khashoggi, towards all sorts of things having to do with executions at all. Basically, what happened from there is that Phil sort of disappeared. The golf tournament in question, though, the experiment, the LIV Golf Project, survived. And it started paying people nine figures. Dustin Johnson was one of those people. Phil Mickelson is one of those people. He's going to play in this thing. And so what do you do when a Saudi-backed tour that is morally reprehensible and compromised in all of the ways that you can extrapolate from what I said is paying people $125 million? Like Dustin Johnson is getting $125 million. Phil Mickelson is getting over $200 million. If you're the majors, right? That's the question here, Alabaster. I think you do the thing you actually do in golf. You lick your finger, put it in the wind, and say, all right, how mad are people about this really? Because what you're trying to do as a major is protect your own ass. And Phil Mickelson playing in the U.S. Open next week is amazing for the U.S. Open. Are you really going to cross a line? Because lots of people have said that you, the Saudi Arabian-backed golf enterprise, have crossed the line. I think we're sort of waiting to see how much outrage is sustainable here.
Well, I'm curious here because I think with the Phil Mickelson thing, like Phil was obviously the big name and Phil or the biggest name when this whole thing started. And Phil is obviously well past his prime and is basically a senior tour player, except for the majors at this point. And that's kind of what this 54 tour is looking like. Because I'm not excited about a group that's headlined by Dustin Johnson and Kevin Na. I thought Kevin Na's, I guess, retirement speech or not speech, but
resignation
yeah. to the PGA was like way too long and thought maybe way too much of himself. I do not know a single person that's ever said they wanted to watch Kevin Na play except when he was, you know, choking and doing terribly at that one hole.
His last name is mostly my reaction to whether I want to watch Kevin Na.
Kevin Na.
And the other stuff, it makes me laugh when you're just, it's so obvious. It's just, you know, we talked about, you know, how the money grabs became a lot more obvious since the pandemic, particularly we sort of put point at college football. But this is the most obvious. And literally they're telling you, hey, yeah, we know things are bad if I take this money, but I'll deal with that in the future. Let's just take the money and see if we can change the rules because they want to play in the Ryder Cup, which is, I mean, I find that amazing that you want to represent your country when you're playing this, you know, Saudi-backed money that's killing, that's killed journalists and you know, done other reprehensible things, that you want to play in this tournament that represents your country. I find that mind-boggling. And so it's just infuriating to me that they're just kind of kicking the can down the road, not addressing the real issues here and saying, hey, maybe, you know, down the road when this has quieted down some, when people aren't talking about it enough, then maybe I can come back and play in these events that I really want to play. And I think it's a bunch of gibberish and they should be pointed out for exactly what they're doing, which is just taking money from morally bankrupt people.
There's so many sort of questions. There's so many interesting angles on this. There's like the serious one where it's like, yes, the Saudi Arabian people, I should say the establishment has done some terrible, morally reprehensible things. Also, terrible things happen in this country too. And there's also this question, which is like, how much, everyone has a number. There's a number for every single thing. And what is the number for you to sort of leave the PGA and play in the LIV thing? There's another thing which is really the most interesting of all of this is I had no idea it stood for 54. It's because they play 54 holes of golf. I had no idea until this very second that it was actually LIV stood for 54. I've been calling it the LIV tournament this entire time.
Jacoby, for the record, the people running the LIV tournament, which I'm going to continue to call the LIV tournament, should continue to call it the LIV tournament, even if they are threatened with litigation by LIV nightclub's representative on Debatable, Israel Gutierrez, who insists on behalf of Miami.
I've got my guy Purple's number, and he is big with the LIV folks. And so I'm just saying that is a bit of a name drop right there for those who know.
Purple is an incredible character in the Miami nightlife scene. I could spend the entire show talking about Purple. He's a great Twitter follow also.
Yes.
But hold on, because before we get to the moral complexity of Purple, Jacoby outlines some of the moral complexity of the story, and he's right. I think with the upshot of this conversation, and look, what Phil has gone through in the weeks prior to this, and now this press conference happens in which journalists are asking hard questions of the golfers like Dustin Johnson, Kevin Na, et al. Like, hey, what the hell are you guys doing? I think the answer that they have not yet said, but the answer that is going to be said in the discourse, and I think it's suitably called that because it's a real, again, some real shit in the story. It's that all sorts of players, governments, geopolitical players, their hands are unclean here, right? Mm-hmm. Like you can point to the NBA, you could point to the EPL, you can point to all sorts of sports globally and
Augusta
National, you can point to their histories, you can point to their backers, and you can have many real questions that make everybody here look hypocritical when it comes to the concept of sports washing, right? And so the Saudi Arabian government, for those unfamiliar, that's why they're here, right? Because they want to make it normalized for Saudi Arabia to be in the sports conversation.
But there is, so how many times have you been in a golf press conference in America and have legitimately heard a question like this, where somebody from the Daily Mail asked players to reconcile the decision to be here given Saudi Arabia human rights record? And Graham McDowell, like, first of all, like that question in itself, you're not asking at any major in the U.S., right? You're probably not. You're probably asking about other things going on in this country, but not directly tied to the people that are funding the tournament. All right. And so Graham McDowell says, I mean, this has been incredibly polarizing. I think we all agree that the Khashoggi situation was reprehensible. And, you know, DJ and Lewis apparently were just nodding in the background. So they're allowed to say these things, but I would like to see them speak even more about it. If it's reprehensible, then let's go ahead and discuss it. If you're using this as a platform to talk about human rights violations, let's do that. But let's just not be so obvious with what we're doing here and then try to say, oh, yeah, that was reprehensible. Well, then do something about it, because Graham McDowell, I'm pretty sure your finances are fine and you don't need this. I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure.
But that's the thing with Phil, Jacoby, is that Phil said the quiet part loud already. Like, he acknowledged very plainly all the things that Izzy is asking the other guys to do now. The other guys, I think, are avoiding saying that. Although they did mention the Khashoggi thing in the press conference, they're doing it in a way that is trying to avoid what Phil got, which was massive blowback. But the other part of the story here, too, which is absurd and hilarious, is that this is the list of teams in this thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, look, we're gonna
have you
do that.
Seen this? Have you seen this?
Fireballs.
Like the team names.
Read them off.
It looks like a badly translated video game. We have those. That's my.
This is.
There it is. We have the Torque. We have the Ironheads. The Stinger singular for
Wait,
some reason.
The New York Flyers. I think they're in. That's Flyers. That's my rec league team name on Wednesday nights.
Smash GC.
I think that's the High Flyers. Is that HY or NY?
Hold on.
Fireballs is one of my
favorites.
Maybe one more tap on the screen. No, I still don't know. I think it's HY. High Flyers. There you go. Yeah. High Flyers.
But the point is, yeah, hold on. We got the Aces, the Cleats.
I feel like it was like my 9-year-old son and his friends got together and they were like, let's brainstorm ideas for these names.
All I'm saying is that if you are paying Phil Mickelson and Dustin Johnson 9 figures, like, improve your graphic design budget, man. Mm. Like, what are we doing here? Anyway. So the point is, like,
says the guy who's on a show who has to hold his phone up for some improve your graphics, bro.
Hey, let me
tap my phone a couple more times. Improve your graphic design budget, guys. Come on.
I unfortunately am not being paid $125 million to participate in a fake television show. But Alabaster.
You're worth it. You can get some gambling debts.
I am worth it, Alabaster. So, before I delve into any more hypocrisy.
Well, no. I think that there's some interesting parallels going on in the sports world that aren't one-to-one. And that is Wimbledon banning Russian players in a month. And it's basically that there's a precedent set by Wimbledon that's applicable to the British Open or the Masters or the US Open of basically being like, we don't want a part of something that could be, you know, morally corrupt. And then there's a second part of this that Tony Reale mentioned on ATH that was interesting. That there's a difference between doing business in a country that has some moral questions and with a country that has these moral questions. And the reason I found that interesting is because that tracks along with what the sponsors are doing. RBC dropping just Dustin Johnson, KPMG dropping Phil Mickelson. Like, as much fun as it is to laugh at the teams, like, it's really dirty that these guys are just taking the money to leave and play on this tour.
Because you're not separating the country from its acts. And can you, if the money is coming effectively from the same place? That's just the question. And I'm sure a lot of these guys are talking themselves out of it and saying, yeah, well, I don't know if that money directly created, you know, the situation where somebody was killed. Who knows? But they're just playing the oblivious card and just not wanting to get really into the meat of it. Like, I don't think if this was 10 years ago and Dustin Johnson is at the height of his career and it looks like he might win 10 majors, if he makes this same decision. This is a money grab late in his career. This is not for, you know, the Jordan Spieths of the world who are still, you know, in their prime. And even Tiger Woods reportedly turned down high 9 figures for this. And again, you say to yourself, does he need that? No. Would it probably have been official for him? Sure. And does he need the PGA Tour? No. But he decided against it. And so, you know, I would like to credit people who make these moral decisions. I'm just kind of tired of people just, you know, whatabouting everything and other sizing everything when it's just like, come on now. Like, we know what we're talking about.
Yeah, Jacoby, before we dive further into this, I want to ask Alabaster, actually, just clarify for us the whole dirtiness aspect here, because you're editorializing in a way that I think I lean in that direction, but just explain the whole like in a country versus from a country money dynamic. Yeah, and the dirtiness that is sort of specific to this story.
Yeah, because this is it's sort of like reputation laundering, and this is from the Saudi public fund. Is where this money is coming from. This right. isn't coming from sponsors, and then it's a tour that's played, you know, just in Saudi Arabia. These are right. courses that are being paid for by the Saudi public fund, and that's the differentiating factor. It's public money.
Right. I think there's a complicated distinction when you try to say, on the one hand, right, the Saudi Royal Fund is funding this explicitly, and then you say examine the case of China, and you're asking yourself, well, what really is the bright line between the corporations in China and the government in China, right? Like, that to me is a little bit of a distinction without a meaningful difference, right? As we all hold up right. our devices here.
But I also, well, Apple Pablo, products. isn't this the ability, if we could go back in time and avoid a partnership and avoid being so dug in financially with that country, don't you think we would have avoided it? It's a similar situation. No, get ahead of it here, we should try.
No, and so you're right. I mean, like yes, is this whataboutism? Yes. Is it also hypocrisy detective work? Yes. Is it a real easy mystery to solve, Jacoby? Kind of also, yes. The question is, yeah, is our outrage consistent or sustainable? I think still.
So I'm not an expertise on many things, but I am an expert on having very, very weak morals and ethics. Because if they came to me and said, Jacoby, we love what you do with ESPN. Here's a number for you to be a commentator on the LIV golf tournament. If that number was a nine-figure number, I'm putting in my 2 weeks right now. Yeah. And that's what I would find. The individual answers I find are interesting here. But golfer by golfer, case by
case. And then I would probably give you a call and say, you know what? I literally couldn't even live with an E. over
no,
there
the live, the
if
live
I wanted
tour.
To. So I really hope you want to split that money with me if you want and let me live over here where I can literally live. And I would say, hey, you know, maybe you should think about some of these morals that you're giving up. And clearly nobody in these, well, I shouldn't say clearly, but clearly nobody has convinced these golfers otherwise. Let's just put it that way.
Yes.
No, Jacoby, for the record, in this hypothetical world, Jacoby is the Robin Hood of morally reprehensible golf tournaments. He is taking that money and he is using it towards yeah. programs yep, domestically
exactly. Exactly.
that we all feel good about. But Jacoby is also...
Oh, no, that's just small. No, again, the ethics and moral things. I would do that, but it would be just a small piece of the pie, just so I could do
course.
The press release to make everyone seem like I'm a good person when I know deep down inside I'm a terrible person.
No doubt. You're posting all sorts of squares on your Instagram account.
Yes, yeah.
To signal yeah. that like you're on the right side of history.
Lots of but rainbows no, for Pride Month, all that.
But let's be real, Jacoby, because you also, I mean, look, what you have just said is how I think 99.9% of humanity would react. I do believe that. I think you're right. I think there's a number for everybody that's high enough. I think Tiger Woods just sort of was an example here. He was reportedly offered... What was it, Alabaster?
High nine figures.
But how did we get this information? He's broadcasting this. He's saying, look at what a good person I am by not taking these high nine figures. Where meanwhile, something tells me Tiger's doing fine. But put up the thing about Mr. Mickelson's forays into the various apps that we all have our phones now.
Well,
because that's an angle on this that makes it turn.
So one thing, it's worth noting that this came from Greg Norman, not Tiger Woods, who relayed the information that he was offered high nine figures for this.
That is a good correction. A good correction and a good job out of Greg Norman making Tiger Woods, morally upstanding in that way. You're right. The gambling thing is also part of the story. Phil Mickelson came out and said today that he is embarrassed and he regrets the fact that a couple of decades ago, I think, he got real deep into gambling. And clearly, he struggled with this.
In the red like that.
Yeah, well, financially, I mean, clearly this has been part of his story. Is like, why is Phil being so reckless in this way? Why does he need all of this money? But I guess at the end here, Alabaster, if we're close to the end here, because I don't think we're going to solve this.
Well, I don't think we actually answered the question.
I don't think we answered the question. So let's
what
try to
do
that.
What do the majors do?
Yeah, I don't think the majors I think the majors should hold firm and stay and just because again for the same reason that I'm not watching the 54 tour because it really is no cuts 54 holes blah 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 like it's not interesting enough for me because the best golfers aren't there like I watch
Agreed.
A lot of golf and Dustin Johnson is now sort of an afterthought in a golf tournament for me. He's just going, is he kind of going to have it? Probably not. All right, well, cool. Don't need to watch him anymore. And so I'm not watching this tour, nor will I miss it if these guys are not in the majors. And I definitely definitely, if you want to just go morals here, want no part of them on the Ryder Cup.
Yeah.
I mean, say like the U.S. Open is an open tournament. British Open's an open tournament. You know, Augusta's kind of like an invitational. It's its own thing. I'm getting all this information from our great researcher, Kevin, by the way.
We need to talk about this, Jacoby, because I never had thought about what an open – the word open, I always thought was just like a – oh, it's like a thing you say in golf. It's an open tournament. The good ones are there. But it's actually, by definition, a thing that you, David Jacoby, could apply to play it.
Yes. Would they let me drink 9 beers while I play?
9 Coronas, you might say.
That's exactly. Great golf beer.
No, Alabaster, I guess where I land on this in the end is what Izzy is saying, that we need to hold this project to the fire, because to do so is to abdicate our responsibility as, like, morally, I don't know, interested? Even just interested is probably the word that's fair here. Are we morally interested as a sports population? Do we want to actually call out?
Not
the
unless
stuff
they see the video, apparently.
Well, that there are actually two follow-ups I have quickly on that. And that one is obviously people at majors in particular, but most golf tournaments, professional golf tournaments, are pretty respectful of the players. And the U.S. Open starts in two weeks in Boston. Like, do you expect them to boo these people? Like, boo this man, Dustin Johnson. Boo this man, Phil Mickelson. And then the second part about this, which I find sort of fascinating, is what is going to be the appetite for this LIV Golf Tour? Like, is anyone going to watch this? Where is this going to exist?
Golf junkie,
like, it's an irrelevant sporting event existing nowhere other than the fact that it's, like, you know, morally reprehensible that it exists.
I mean, far be it from us, a fake television show that exists on the internet, to defame a fake golf tournament that also lives on the internet. But it is not a thing I am interested in.
This will not make the show. The Monday, the debatable on Monday after the first LIV tournament, it's not going to be A1.
No, the clips from the press conference are going to be more viewed than any clips from the actual golf tournament. And is that good PR? Is that sports washing or the opposite? I think, again, it depends on whether you think the upshot of this entire discourse is a shrug or a continued holding of some sort of protest side.
Well, it's funny, because let's just say Dustin... Oh, I'm sorry.
No. And that's the Dustin Johnson sort of example. Izzy, go ahead.
Yeah, well, let's just say he does play in the U.S. Open, right? And, you know, we watched an entire NBA playoff series that was interrupted by protesters because, you know, the right people bought tickets. I don't think the people that are normally going to come to the U.S. Open are going to sit here and protest Dustin Johnson or going to boo Kevin Na or whomever's allowed to play. But I do think if the right people buy tickets, yeah, you're going to see, and you should, because frankly, and look, I'm not calling for protesters to show up at this thing, but if there are people running up and gluing themselves to an NBA floor because of the way chickens are treated, then maybe we should have some people who are just as equally upset about the way humans are treated. And again, the whataboutism is just going to be talking about me and covering the NBA in China. Okay, I get this. Trying to get in front of things here. You can still fix some things that are deeply rooted elsewhere. You can still do that. Not saying we can't, but just trying to get ahead of things here.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, this is the needle we have to thread. And I think being upfront and transparent about how we are approaching this is kind of what anybody involved can do. Man. At the end of the day, though, Alabaster, it seems like what everybody has said, and Jacoby, tell me this is your impression too, they are saying, wow, this is a lot of money, and I am going to accept this amount of money.
I said that earlier, and Izzy made some great points that made me feel bad about saying that. Great job by you. But I think one of the best points that Izzy made, like one thing that we're all sort of glossing over, is the golf part. It's not good golf. So it's like, I don't watch Arena League football. Shout out to all the Arena League players. They're trying their hardest at it. I don't go to the games. I don't know the team names.
I barely watch the match.
I'm not going to Coney Island Cyclones games, even though I love Nathan's hot dogs. Like, it's just like, if the product isn't good, if the sport part isn't there, it just seems like no one's going to be interested. This is going to fizzle out.
How dare you not be interested in the Majestics? I'm just reading another team name from the LIV tournament. In Punch GC.
Let's move on to the Lakers. The soap opera that never starts here on this show. Hard pivot. And got more sound
so
for
real
this topic, too.
Topic then.
Yeah. Got more sound for you guys to listen to on this topic as well. And things have taken a turn. I thought that Russell Westbrook he was going to be gone from LA if they could find a suitor for him. But they hired Darvin Ham, and that might not be the case. And my question is, how do you see things playing out for the Lakers now that they seem to be all in on Russ?
So seem to be is the operative phrase that demands that we evaluate what it seems like. So let's play the Darvin Ham video first, Alabaster. Should we start there?
Don't get it messed up. Russ is one of the best players our league has ever seen. And there's still a ton left in that tank. I don't know why people tend to try to write him off. I'm going to approach him like I do every player I've ever encountered. We're going to talk about our running habits, with the ball, without the ball.
It's Nas watching, too.
The team, the rhythm of the team, and trying to establish a rhythm with LeBron, Russ, AD.
It's like he's placing the words directly in Darvin's mind.
Defensively and offensively.
So for the podcast audience, you need to find the video of us watching that, because I did not know that Russell Westbrook was arms standing crossed. There. I had not seen this until now, truly. He is standing there with his arm crossed with a Nas shirt, as Jacoby alluded
to. It's not just Nas' shirt. It's Nas' huge head also staring at Darvin Ham. It's not just, it doesn't say Nas on it. It's his huge head.
No, it's four eyeballs staring at Darvin Ham from like right next to the podium, it felt like. And that is one of the greatest, just the visuals.
Oh, God.
What do you expect Darvin Ham to say if that is the context for a quote that got circulated as something that came in a vacuum as opposed to the opposite when the guy is right there?
You asked the right question. What do you expect Darvin Ham to say? Right? Like that's really the right question right there. I think it was rhetorical even. But it's like, what do you expect him to say? Steve Nash looked all of us right in the eyeballs and was like, we are not trading James Harden. This is what you do if you are
a head coach.
If you're a head coach in the NBA, you have the roster's the roster until it's not the roster. You don't tell your boyfriend or girlfriend that you're thinking about breaking up with them in a couple weeks. You know what I mean? That's just kind of how this works. Or maybe you do, but that's another conversation for another day. But I will say, there's something wrong with me. Like, we all know the definition of insanity. There's part of me.
No,
yes, there is.
Kobe.
There's a part of me that's like, maybe if AD's healthy and they change some of the I can't believe I'm even saying
this part of you so many times.
Last year, right around this time, I was like, Russell Westbrook's going to fit perfectly. Remember him just coming off that run with the Wizards? And I sold myself on this idea that LeBron's not going to play 82 games. He could slide into the LeBron role when LeBron's not there. And when LeBron's on the bench, you could put in Russell Westbrook to slide it. It's like, this is actually going to work. This is going to be great. And there's not all of me, but like 45% of me is like, if AD's healthy and LeBron's healthy and Russell Westbrook's healthy, you change some role players, you bring in a new coach, you bring in
like
a new 500 voice,
team, like the card
this
says.
Is going to work. This is going to work.
Oh my God.
A couple of things about Darvin Ham. He was in the league when I covered it daily. And me and Ira Winderman from the Sun Sentinel always wanted them, or Milwaukee at the time, to produce a Darvin Ham slam cam, which they never did. And I think the Lakers should be able to do that. Anytime there's a dunk replay, it's the Darvin Ham slam cam. Also, I never would have guessed that. I didn't know this about him. He was shot in the face accidentally when he was younger. I could never tell.
What?
That's a good looking face. Didn't look like he was shot in the face. But yeah, he said he was accidentally shot in the face when he was younger.
Great looking face.
Yeah.
Whoa,
No, there it is. I was shot in the face by accident in 1988. It made me fearless. I don't feel no pressure. It's basketball. But when you say...
That would fill me with fear. I'd be full of fear for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I was going to say...
Accidentally. I would at all times, I'd be scared about being shot in the face
the right
accidentally
response.
For the rest of my life. But me and Darvin Ham are obviously built differently.
No, that is not what I've expected Darvin Ham to say after that. Yeah, correct. Yeah. Would not have expected
but continue.
That one.
Sorry to interrupt, Israel.
No, it's okay, because it's funny that you, Jacoby, that you mentioned that, like, all the things that Darvin Ham said, you're just like, yeah, you know what? I don't know. But if your starting point is, I'm going to make Russell Westbrook into a defensive wizard who likes to play off the ball? Well, no kidding. That's what everybody would love to do, right, at this point of his career. Like, but if he's defensively has never been a wizard, he's never made an All-NBA defensive team.
Well,
and,
he has been a wizard.
He has been a wizard. You're right. He has been a defensive wizard. Ooh, that 100% is true. But he definitely was not a guy who thrived off the ball. And so, in fact, he spent most of his – and this is not even a knock on Westbrook necessarily, because if you do the entire thing that you do your entire career and go somewhere else and they ask you to do something different, of course you're going to be upset about it or not going to be natural with it. But he's just – he was spending the entire year figuring out how he can get back on the ball instead of playing off the ball. So just because Darvin Ham says it doesn't mean it gives it any more credibility unless he's got some sort of mind control on Russell. And based on that video, it looks like it's the other way around.
Well, let me say something. We're missing one of the key parts of this story, one of the key details that has me really believing in the Lakers. Rasheed Wallace is in the building, ladies and gentlemen. We brought in Rasheed Wallace.
So true.
Darvin Ham's former teammate and the Pistons, they won a championship together. You bring in Darvin Ham, but he's the Trojan horse that holds Rasheed Wallace inside of it that they're going to release on this Lakers locker room. And, oh, wait, we have a second clip.
Right now, I got to say, Russ is the best player in the NBA right now. It's no disrespect to KD and Kyrie and LeBron, but, hey, now.
Steph Curry?
No disrespect to Steph. I know you scoring champ. You know, you're getting but man, what this kid is doing,
Jokic?
And it's for the season. Though,
you about to go viral. You didn't even know.
Thank you for putting that 2021 on the top corner of the screen, because we never would have known what year he was talking about.
And yeah, for various reasons, you may have been able to deduce that was from May 2021 and not May 2022. But the whole thing of, like, we're going to bring in these guys who, by the way, are great locker room guys. Darvin Ham is – I mean, and Darvin Ham is more than that. He's also an excellent coaching, head coaching prospect. He's been rumored to be a guy deserving of this job for years. But the quotes, Alabaster, you were putting down there about where sort of Darvin Ham snuck in some of that constructive criticism right beneath the layer of a lot of gas left in the tank, right? He's talking about sacrifice. He's talking about, yes, all of that gas in the tank, putting it towards defense. Like, I believe, thanks to Andrew Wiggins, that there is no such thing as being too late for your second act, right? Andrew Wiggins taught me that this year. But Andrew Wiggins also, like, went to a totally different team with a totally different hierarchy and a totally different job description. And he seemed to, like, really understand that this was his last straw. For Russell Westbrook, this should have happened so long ago that I'm like, it's never too late, but Russell Westbrook may be the exception that proves the rule.
Well, I mean, he wouldn't defer, well, not necessarily wouldn't, but people were yelling at him to defer more often to Kevin Durant, okay? And so if he didn't do that, if he's digging his heels in throughout his career, then of course he's going to feel the same way now, especially when he's going to look around and say, look, I don't see any Kevin Durant in their prime on this team. Like this, you know, with an injured Anthony Davis and a 36, 37-year-old LeBron James, I should still be able to give you most of what I have done in the past. When Darvin Ham throws around the word sacrifice, and, you know, it's great. It's great for somebody like, you know, Chris Bosh, who definitely had to sacrifice the most from that, you know, threesome in Miami. But you're not taking away his ability to defend. You're not taking away his ability to shoot the ball from the mid-post. With Russell, you're taking away the one thing that he has done primarily, which is take the ball and go to the rim. And can't do that without the ball in your hands. And so if he's got to learn an entirely different element or commit to an entirely different element of playing off the ball, that's probably going to mess with him. So if I can see him maybe, and I saw some videos of him taking three-pointers during the offseason. He does it every offseason, I'm sure. But if you can tell me that he's going to shoot in the 33% range from three, then it doesn't matter how good he is in the other, you know, other stuff. It's a learning curve. He'll eventually maybe learn to play better off the ball. But if he can't shoot in the 30s at all, then you're just fitting a square peg into a round hole, and you should just, you know, move on, because it's an expensive peg.
Well, I think thing that we always discuss with this Lakers team is we always talk about AD, LeBron, Russ. AD, LeBron, Russ. Like, Austin Reeves was, like, a key part of their rotation. You know what I mean?
It's Roberts, like, out of nowhere.
Yeah, it's like one of the exactly like another former Piston. And it's also like we forget that when you have three players that make $40 million, that doesn't give you a lot of like room to build around the edges, and then you end up with the team that they have. Like, I think sometimes we focus too much on like the Nets big three or the Lakers big three, but the math suggests that is going to like inhibit your ability to win basketball games regardless who the head coach and the assistant coach are.
Well, Master, I know you love listening to Jacoby sort of swing wildly between optimism and then reality about the Lakers. So where do you land?
Well, a few things. First of all, it's only a big three when the three are actually good players. And so this is a really a big two, and then a sort of washed up guy who can't shoot, play defense, or be off the ball. Cause he
don't talk about LeBron like that, all right?
Fair point, but these are, you know, your scary, scary Lakers with LeBron and AD. But, guys, I wanted to – it's fake trade season, and I wanted to pitch you all some fake trades. Pablo, first one's with you. Boy.
Oh, this is the Sixers. Sixers are involved.
I have nothing more than Alabaster's fake trade machine.
Okay. Well, you know, Pablo, you're in a bit of a pickle. Joel Embiid's going to be 30 after next season. James Harden's got a tissue paper hamstring and is overweight. You've got a mediocre, at best, coach. Allegedly. You know, the roster has flaws. When do you clear the books here? Not re-sign James Harden? And I'll offer you a Russell Westbrook and a Lakers 2027 pick for Tobias Harris. You can clear the books of Tobias, Russ is expiring, and you're not going to re-sign James Harden. Start anew with Joel Embiid and Tyrese Maxey. What do you think?
So I send
Tobias Harris.
Season. Yeah, he's looking at 2024.
I receive Russell Westbrook and a pick.
2027. It's the only one they can trade. Pick.
Oh my God! I can't believe I'm thinking about this.
This isn't bad.
This is actually good content.
The question of whether I would trust Russell Westbrook over Tobias Harris.
Well, don't forget step one, which is not re-signing Harden. That's a key part of this that he glossed over.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to re-sign James Harden. Period. So I don't know why that's
CM Del Moore
sort of thrown in as a function of this for reasons that the podcast audience will discover later in our fourth square. I'm going to say no. And I'm going to say no because the idea of signing up for Russell Westbrook is
You're not signing up for Russell Westbrook. It's one season.
Jacoby, one season is not is one more season that I have to spare. This is a win now team. Is Russell Westbrook going to help us do that next season more than Tobias Harris? I do not believe that. So no.
Okay, you might want for that, James Harden.
For that, counterpoint, for that yeah. If you don't sign James Harden, then what? What else are you doing for this win now team?
If I do not re-sign James Harden.
Mm-hmm.
The answer is not Russell Westbrook.
Gordon Hayward, what are we doing? What are we doing? What is he?
Hurricane season, baby. It is hurricane season. I have no idea if this computer is going to keep going, but the lights just went out real quick.
So before Alabaster interjects, my own personal strategy to this offseason is to check my own breakers and then to try and trade for Bradley Beal, or not Donovan Mitchell, but Bradley Beal specifically. Okay. That would be the guy that I will delusionally create trades for. I'm not doing it for Russell Westbrook, Alabaster.
I'm not here to knock Donovan Mitchell for no reason, but you guys recognize he's 6'1", right? There's a lot of people who are trading him, like, think he's like 6'5", 6'6". Like, I'm doing it 6'1". But anyway, just moving on.
Yeah, for that reason, I am.
I feel bad for Alabaster before you interject. He told me before the show about all the great quotes that he has for us, but we're just eating up all of the clock with these great topics.
I know. Well, I'm actually thinking about these trades.
Don't worry. I'll be the Time Lord here and add some minutes if we need to.
Okay.
But
Time Lord, you will. Great work. Can someone count all the pun jokes we have in this show? Because I'm up to like 8.
Nah. Izzy, I got your fake trade now.
Callback pun joke.
Okay. You know who could use some heat culture? Russell Westbrook. You know who would be the grittiest, hardest working team? Russell Westbrook and Jimmy Butler together. I mean, that's heat culture. That's Pat Riley. You know who you hate? You know who you hate? The guy who couldn't really look like he passed the body fat test, Kyle Lowry. You know who else you hate? Duncan Robinson. Let's trade both of them for Russell Westbrook. Salaries match.
First of all, he's speaking for largely Heat Twitter, not for me specifically. I don't hate anybody. I wouldn't be entirely opposed to that idea. I think the initial problem is you're talking about two things. One, the Heat led the league in three-point shooting in the regular season, and they clearly have a strategy with that. Can't really do that with Russell and Jimmy on the floor and Bam Adebayo on the floor. And also turning him into a Heat defender. Again, still remains a problem because he's never really been that throughout his career. So I don't know if this is necessarily the place for him. However, there are plenty of Heat people who would say, yeah, get me You know, get Kyle Lowry and his above 18% body fat, which is not right, out of here. And you know, Duncan Robinson's $90 million on the bench. So obviously you would want to move him. So I would probably accept this trade if I'm a shark here. Wow, this is the shark segment that you guys have been trying to get off the ground this whole time.
We're shark
Probably take this. I'll probably take this just for the
that's
1 year.
That's a good trade. Honestly, that's...
I love the idea of Kurt Rambis, Jeannie Buss, and Phil Jackson just sitting outside in like the Malibu beach chair, just like discussing these very same things. You know, the brain trust. The brain trust going
right.
through
No, and Magic's on FaceTime.
Yeah, Jay Moore is there. Jay Moore's there.
Jimmy Goldstein's there, yeah.
Oh, wow, Trey right. Machine is active.
Last one, and Jacoby.
Damn.
This is no. Bit, I don't want Russell Westbrook.
No, it's a three-way deal. Oh. Three-way deal.
Oh, I love a three-way.
Oh yeah, I knew I could hook you in with a three-way deal here. You know who loves Russell Westbrook and also loves making bad decisions? Michael Jeffrey Jordan.
Oh, whoa. Oh,
how do I get him there?
Oh yeah.
They also have to unload a bad contract, but I'm gonna give them the Hornets. They're gonna get Russell Westbrook and the 2027 Lakers first round pick. They're going to send to the Brooklyn Nets Gordon Hayward and Terry Rozier, two guys who can shoot and fit with Ben Simmons and Kevin Durant and Joe Harris and, you know, their litany of bad centers. And you know who the Brooklyn Nets are going to send? The Brooklyn Nets, they're going to reunite LeBron and Kyrie. They're going to get off the Kyrie deal. They're going to send Kyrie to the Lakers. He'll be the Lakers' new big three. The Hornets are going to end up with Russ and a pick. And the Nets are going to end up with Rozier and Hayward.
I hate to interrupt a good fake trade with some facts, but they don't have a Kyrie deal to get off right now. So
why do we have
sign
one
and trade? Sign
Kyrie.
And trade.
Why can't we just
sign and
go
trade?
Two ways?
So the Lakers are going to take on a brand new Kyrie Irving deal. It's like, let's not forget, Kyrie Irving literally was like, this LeBron guy, hate him, don't want to play basketball with him. Like, he said that to everybody to get his way off the Cavs.
I like the idea of Gordon Hayward playing with LeBron instead.
As a
huge,
perfect
off the ball.
As a longtime Melo Ball supporter, I hate anything that stunts Melo Ball's growth. And that's exactly what this would do. Melo Ball is a man you want to have the ball in his hands. Like, you want to build around him if you're Michael Jeffrey Jordan. You don't want to add a Russell Westbrook. It's like, no.
I agree that's not a great fit, but I also don't agree that having a Terry Rozier next to him is necessarily great for his growth. I think Gordon Hayward could be, but I don't think Gordon Hayward is really, you know, the mentor type is here. Come with me, buddy. And so, and if you look at like when they win, they tend to win more with Gordon Hayward in there, which is why I love the idea of eliminating the Kyrie Irving from that draft from that trade possibility and just going straight Hornets Lakers there, more for the Lakers so than
damn
Hornets.
Two different ways to reject a menage a trade, Alabaster.
No, that was a heat check. That was a heat. I got the first two got like tepid support, and I was like, I was shocked, and I was like, heat check time. All right, let's move on to these quotes.
Well done.
First quote.
Those are good fake trades. You know what? I'm gonna say Alabaster. Good fake trades. Good job. Good job by you.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
Surprisingly.
You know.
To see you had to do that, Pablo. You had to do that.
It's okay. Being insulted on live TV is sort of my love language.
I can't give 100% compliments unless I don't like you.
Same.
You're a horrible basketball player.
That's so terrible. Coming off the fact that you gave me 100% compliment, Jacoby, that's so bad. All right, let's move on to this quote. I'm 77 years old, and right now I can do more push-ups than you. And your choices are Greg Popovich, Pat Riley, Joe Lacob, and Phil Jackson.
Wow.
Well,
I love
seen this one.
I have not seen it.
I'm going to lay out. First of all, Izzy's like, I could definitely do more push-ups than whoever said this. I know that's your first response, and that's the correct response, and you are correct.
Yeah, I want Izzy's scouting report here. Who is most likely to be able to do that many push-ups at 77 years old?
Well, the most likely is also the person who said it, because I know the answer to this question.
Oh, man.
But to follow up, because I know this will be a follow-up question for most people who hear this. No, I was not in the room.
All right. B, Pat Riley is my answer now.
Yeah, here you go.
Let's watch.
I'm 77 years old, and right now I can do more push-ups than you can do right now. If you want to go to the mat, let's go.
Shirt's off, Riley.
I already mentioned his name. He was talking to Ira Winderman, the second time he gets referenced on the show today. But yes, I can do more push-ups than both of them combined.
Wait, so is that...
Izzy, your loved ones, Pat, your loved ones are in a cage above a shark tank. And you have to do 60 straight push-ups. Can you do it?
Oh, yeah. That I mean, yeah, of course.
He's totally he's insulted that the number is
the number 60. No, I didn't have the number ahead of time. I couldn't do 60. No way.
Look, 60 is a big number. Like, I remember when I was younger, I would try to get to 60 and get past it. And I did. I got to 69 once, and then I just stopped. And then
69.
But 60 is a big number. But if my family's at stake, I'm probably going to get another 20 in and feel stronger than ever. My follow-up question, though, is like, is the water, am I in the water? Or
no, you're outside. Because
I'm like, the water I'm not great with.
Yeah. And they're also, they're nurse sharks. They're not even dangerous sharks. They just said shark tank. Yeah.
Did Izzy just casually imply that he could do 90 push-ups without a problem? Is that what just happened there?
No, not without a problem. If I was, you know how you say when, if your family member's under a car, you have the strength to lift the car. Like, I think I could do an extra 20, 30 push-ups if somebody's life were at stake, sure. And plus, nobody's checking form at that point.
That's always, you know what? I'm going to answer every question about my strength that way. I'm just going to pretend that, a loved one is in danger. And in that context, yes, I absolutely can bench 400 pounds.
Izzy, can you tilt the camera down? And how many push-ups can you do? Can we see it?
Oh, no.
I mean, like, you want me to, like, get all sweaty and stuff. And then, like, I got around the horn after this.
Yeah, this is what producers do. This is a very producer move. You're allowed to say no.
Cardio not too long.
We'd settle for Pablo.
Excuse me.
Pablo will do it.
Excuse you. There is, without a loved one in danger, I do not feel comfortable completing this exercise.
I only exercise when my loved ones are in danger. So unless you kidnap my child, I'm not doing any push-ups for you, Alabaster.
She is napping peacefully.
One more thing, but speaking of loved ones, did you see Pat Riley's other quote from this?
Yes, that was a better quote. Much better quote.
We have it for you guys.
What's that one?
When you're trying to decide of whether to run it back or if a team needs changes to kind of invigorate the roster, what type of factors go into that type of decision?
I run it back with my wife every week. So, you know, and we always come to good terms.
Wow. Coming to terms is a new euphemism that I will forever use.
Senior Miami Heat correspondent on this panel, your reaction, Mr. Gutierrez.
My reaction is bravo, my man. Like, run it back more than once a week if you can, you know, if you can use it, if you can do it without any sort of enhancements, any sort of help, you know?
No, Izzy, no, as you know from covering this team, no one has ever used any enhancements. It's all just culture. It's all culture.
Oh, natural, as you can see by that photo down there of Pat Riley.
If your culture lasts for 3 hours, call a doctor.
Pablo, you got bars today. You're doing a great job. You're carrying us today, Pablo. Great job.
For the podcast audience, I also just can't get over the Pat Riley hand gesture of he's like, yeah, coming to terms. Like that one.
I just wonder, like, that was sitting in the holster. Like, he was making some sort of a reference to he and his wife doing something every week. And he's like, run it back. I think that's what I'll choose. And he's just like, just bragging about his sex life. It's like, I've never seen this side of Pat Riley. But
she was not happy.
I want to go on a cruise with this version of Pat Riley.
When he got home, she was like, you said what now? All my friends are texting me. What'd you say?
Whose back are you running?
Let's move on to our next quote, and that quote is, I just want people to understand that I went for 150 with Matt Moore as QB versus the Minnesota Vikings. I love Matt Moore, but Tua T is 10 Matt Moores, and your options are Preston Williams, Mike Gesicki, Tyreek Hill, or Izzy Gutierrez's burner.
Izzy, for those unfamiliar, and I don't know how you could be, Izzy believes that Tua Tagovailoa is a left-handed Drew Brees. Is that the terminology?
I believe I was quoted as saying he has the potential of being a left-handed Drew Brees. Yes.
Right. So I'm going to go with D on principle. Izzy Gutierrez.
On principle, I would never have a burner account, but okay.
I'm going to go with D just because I want to add another punch up to the tally.
The guy who has been most vocal, and I actually don't know this one, the guy who has been most vocal about Tua T is Tyreek. And so I'm going to go with Tyreek, although my backup answer is Mike Gesicki. No reason.
I just want people to understand that I went for 150 with Matt Moore as my quarterback. I love you, Matt Moore. Versus the Minnesota Vikings. If you don't remember that game, 150 and one touchdown with Matt Moore as my quarterback. Yeah, so who? Happening? Hey, and Tua.
So what you trying to say?
And Tua T is 10 Matt Moores. I love Matt Moore, but Tua T is 10 Matt Moores.
That couldn't be 20 Matt Moores. It also works with the alliteration. Tua T is 10.
the graphics department. Wow.
I apologize for defaming our graphics department. That is an incredible exchange rate they visually
and think. No football team can ever lose if they just had 10 Matt Moores on the field.
you don't even need an 11th. Just 10 is fine.
He'll snap the ball to himself.
Jeez. The Blazers the jersey.
I love all this love for
Tyreek. The Blazer under the jersey
Tua,
we need to discuss. I've never seen a football blazer underneath a football jersey underneath a blazer.
You know
also,
what?
Players wearing their own jerseys is obviously something I've never understood unless you're actually playing on the field.
No, they are playing the field. That's why they're wearing their jerseys. I remember, speaking of heat culture, back in Florida at the University of Florida Culture, Udonis Haslem showing up to a track meet in his jersey that said Haslem in the back.
Oh, yeah. Paul George went on vacation in Greece.
Yeah.
And wore his jersey. He married
a University of Florida track runner, so it worked.
Oh, boom. Wow. There's correlation right there.
It just feels to me like Tyreek Hill was recording that interview in one of those restaurants where they make you wear a blazer. And they were like, sir, we have a jacket for you. Please. This is a high-end
establishment. Do you have kids sizes?
You can do your podcast here, but please wear jackets. Yes, thank you.
Great point. That's a great point, Pablo.
I've been that guy, for the record. I've been that guy. Yeah. Alabaster, what do you got?
Well, I have one final question for Jacoby, and that is...
Oh, no.
Was that the greatest compliment turned insult you'd ever seen? We were just talking about that. I love Matt Moore. I love Matt Moore. But 2 a T is 10 Matt Moore. That's got to be up there with the passion.
It's called a compliment sandwich, which is like I just can't compliment anyone without insulting them. It's just sort of like part of my like evil nature on the inside. It's just very difficult to do.
Natural follow-up would be how many 2 a T's is Patrick M.? I think Mahomes might be 3 or 4 Tua T's.
Wow.
That is a good follow up question.
If a Matt Moore is 1/10 of a Tua T. So he's probably
Matt Moore conversion rate is so you're getting to like 4 dozen Matt Moores. Yeah.
Yeah, we're measuring in base Matt Moore. Yeah. We're doing a unit of measurement.
How many Matt Moores is your quarterback? And then it's just a bunch of Matt Moore heads.
To liters to gallons. Like I still haven't nailed that quite yet.
I had to Google what 3 ounces looks like the other day. It's way more than you think.
That is too much cocaine.
I mean, I was just going to go tequila, but dang.
But it's not too much Corona.
Never Corona. Too much
no,
Corona.
No, no.
Our dear sponsor here at Debatable.
Oh, man.
I feel like we did a lot
tour. Blue on your mind.
Shout out to Purple.
Looking at it, huh? Shout out to Purple.
Purple. I need to know about Purple.